We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
We need to work together to get the economy back on track, to recover from the pandemic, to get everybody vaccinated, to make sure that people get back to work as quickly as possible. And we have millions of consumers out there. They love to shop. They want to shop in person. They want to shop safely. We think we can do that. And let's get on with it and do it as quickly as possible.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. After a truly tense election and chaotic and unruly start to 2021 in the nation's capital, the country remains divided as ever. But nevertheless, there is work to be done. Here today to talk about what a new administration means for retail and what NRF and the retail industry's policy priorities are for 2021 is David French, NRF's Senior Vice President of Government Relations. David was recently recognized as one of the top lobbyists by the Hill newspaper. We'll talk to David to share what matters most for retailers and how we'll work to make progress for the industry in the coming year. Now, my co-host for today's episode is my friend, my colleague, Mary McGinty, Vice President of Communications and Public Affairs for the NRF. Mary, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on today, Bill.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. And how are you doing?
I'm good. We're just coming out of our annual convention that we held virtually. And I'm excited to talk to David today about what is in store for the rest of 2021.
Well, David always has interesting things to say. There is absolutely no doubt. So, David, welcome to Retail Gets Real once again.
Thanks, Bill. It's great to be with you and Mary. I look forward to our conversation.
Well, we got a lot to talk about. I mean, this is going to be a very, very interesting time for the retail industry and, you know, for our country. So we have a new president. We have a Democrat House. We have a Democrat Senate. We have new appointees coming down the line after their Senate confirmation. So give us kind of a holistic look at it, David. I mean, we've been through this before, new administrations, new Congress, new members. How are you viewing this as it relates to what it means for retail?
Well, the first thing that you can expect out of a new administration and a new Congress is there's going to be some degree of urgency to get back to business and to get back to basics and to get some stuff done. People talk about a honeymoon period or the first 100 days. I think President Biden is going to be dealing with nominations and putting his cabinet and his appointments in place in the first few days of the new administration. But very quickly, he's going to want to achieve some agenda items and get some things behind him. I expect we're going to have a really important debate over the next level of relief for COVID. And President Biden is going to want to make some strong moves to reinforce stability in the economy, as well as to advance a plan for promoting the health and safety of all Americans through better testing and vaccines, access and things like that. And those are, I think, going to be the things we see right away.
So, David, you know, one of the things that the former President Trump did was after he took office, he did a series very quickly of executive orders. I don't know that people really understand what those are and how they are done. And do we expect Biden to do the same thing? Do they carry the weight of law?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Bill. Thank you for asking. Executive orders are mild policy statements. They don't have the weight of law. And they also don't have the importance of regulation. So if you think about it in a hierarchy of action, an executive order is more like a statement of administrative policy and a direction to the officials of his administration, how he wants things carried out. One of the more notable things President Trump did when he came into office in 2017 was a ban on travel by certain groups. I think it was more commonly known as a Muslim ban. But and that was very provocative and controversial. The Biden team is undoing those kinds of executive orders that were controversial and pushing back in the other direction. You'll see a range of executive orders on immigration, on environmental policy, energy policy, a series of statements about the administration's priorities in this space. The other way an executive order can be used is to dictate policy within the federal workforce. Executive orders are tools. They will use these tools.
They're more like just if you were just giving a direction to the people that work for you. Here's what the priorities need to be, and this is what I think you need to do in order to carry that out. But again, I mean, I think that's a very important point that you just made, which is they don't carry the weight of law. And so it's more like the boss telling you this is what needs to get done.
It's kind of in between. They have, because the president's the chief law enforcement officer and chief law administrator, because they dictate how laws are carried out, they can carry almost the weight of law. What's different is they're not as everlasting as a statute, as ongoing as a regulation.
Yeah, I don't think, Mary, you may have gotten a much higher education than I did at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, even though I personally went to the Harvard of the South. And while I learned a lot there, one of the things I never really heard about was executive orders until I came to Washington, D.C. But it's definitely something that gets a lot of attention and most certainly was used a lot by the former administration. So anyway, Mary, go ahead and ask your smart question.
Can I jump in here and add one other thing? I'm looking forward to Mary bestowing knowledge here. But the observation I'd like to make is you saw executive orders used a lot more by President Obama after the Democrats lost control of the House and Senate, after his first couple of years. And that's because the president can act unilaterally. What we'll see, because the House and the Senate are very narrowly divided, you may see the tool of an executive order used more frequently because it doesn't require congressional action and it can be done outside of the normal congressional process.
So, David, I mentioned that we just hosted thousands of retail leaders at our annual convention. And the theme for this year was moving forward together. So as we look to move forward with the new administration, can you walk us through what does it look like working with this new administration? And what are the retail industry's top policy priorities that we're hoping to accomplish?
Thanks, Mary. The first thing I think that we expect with the new administration is a more stable policymaking process and a more thoughtful ongoing dialogue. We've been encouraged. We've been in contact with the Biden administration or the Biden transition team throughout the transition and had good relationships with many of them from their previous careers in the Obama administration. And we've worked with them before. Many of these officials are well known to us. And we've been very encouraged by their openness, their willingness to engage in dialogue on issues like the COVID response, vaccines, testing, economic policy issues, trade. We've had a lot of good conversations. And we expect that this administration will be open and transparent in working with us and other members of the business and employer community to try to fashion solutions. We're optimistic that things like infrastructure reform can get done, but we're also concerned that we're looking at an agenda that could include tax increases on businesses through an increase in the corporate income tax. I think we're optimistic at this point in the administration that we're going to have a fair, honest, and forthright relationship with the administration, and we're going to be able to find ways to work with them. But we're also realistic that there are going to be some priorities where we're going to be finding differences with the administration.
Well, with that in mind, so that's the administration. We've got a Democrat Congress. We've got a Democrat House. So how does that look for us in terms of working with them to get some of our policy priorities through the Congress?
So as NRF, we are pro-retail. We're not Republican or Democrat. We approach the policy agenda that we have based on how we can build a coalition of support. Sometimes that coalition is Democrat, sometimes that coalition is Republican. Most of the time, our coalitions are bipartisan. And we're looking for, when it comes to our policy agenda, we're looking for a coalition of 218 pro-retail members in the House and 51 pro-retail members in the Senate. And we're going to try to advance our agenda in a bipartisan manner.
Are there any new members of either the House or Senate that, I mean, we've always had some retailers that are in the House and Senate. Do we have any in this current Congress that you're aware of?
Yeah, thanks for asking. We certainly, over the years, have seen a lot of members of Congress elected from the retail ranks. Folks who started their careers working in retail, folks who've worked in restaurants and food service, who have a broad experience in the kinds of issues that retailers and our restaurant members share. One member in particular, Congresswoman Joyce Beatty, was selected to be the next chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. When she was in the private sector, she had a retail store in the Columbus, Ohio area. And we have a close relationship with Congresswoman Beatty. So there are many retailers in Congress, and we're always encouraged by how strongly our champions in Congress feel about the retail sector.
You know, I think your job is made a heck of a lot easier by the fact that there is not one member of Congress, not one senator, there's not one secretary in the cabinet or deputy or anybody else that comes from a place that does not have retail. Everyone has retail, and they know retailers. And they know what retailers do and the importance of the work that they do in the communities that they serve, the people that they employ, the people that they have leadership positions in the Chamber of Commerce. They go to church with them. Their kids go to school with the other kids. So I think it's, you know, it's great to be able to have that bond that, you know, our retailers, and in many cases, especially in the smaller communities, the retailers are big time civic leaders. And so that's got to be helpful, I would think, in the long run.
You bet. Members of Congress love their local retailers. They shop there all the time. We work with our grassroots team to develop those relationships even further. We bring members of Congress into stores for store tours. During the pandemic, we've been doing these store tours virtually. It's actually been a really exciting process to watch. When a member of Congress visits a store, you can see they have a special relationship with their local retailer. And that does make our job a lot easier.
Yeah, I have no doubt. Mary, sorry. I got on my soapbox.
David, to Bill's point, what message would you want to send overall from the retail industry to the 117th Congress?
Thanks, Mary. First of all, you know, we need to work together to get the economy back on track, to recover from the pandemic, to get everybody vaccinated, to make sure that people get back to work as quickly as possible. And, you know, obviously, we have millions of consumers out there. They love to shop. They want to shop in person. They want to shop safely. We think we can do that. And let's get on with it and do it as quickly as possible. Once we're done with the pandemic, I think continuing the growth in the economy is also a priority. And, you know, we can do that by making sure that, you know, we clear away the obstacles to growth, and that one of the obstacles to growth is our out-of-date poor infrastructure. We can get an infrastructure package done. We can certainly work on ensuring that we have the data tools to serve our customers better, and that means acting on a national standard on privacy. We need to make sure that all retailers can use customer data to serve their customers better in a way that's fair and transparent and isn't burdened by harmful state laws we've seen passed in some jurisdictions. Those kinds of things, I think, will help us make sure retail is on the right track and the economy continues to grow.
The old saying, as you are familiar with, is that all politics are local. So in order to get things done, even on a federal level, you have to get some kind of buy-in on the municipal and the state level. So how do you do that? It's, you know, there's a lot of municipalities in 50 plus states. And when I say plus, I just mean the islands.
The retail sector is fortunate. We have a team, a network of state retail associations that work very closely with local and state officials. There are partners in the states, and they're really professionals, and they have been invaluable to the retail community throughout the pandemic. They have been on the front lines of keeping retail open and keeping state and local officials apprised of how people can shop safely. So we couldn't do it alone, and we're really very, very appreciative of the expertise and the value they provide. And we certainly encourage our members to consider joining state retail associations wherever possible, because we can't do it alone.
They really do a fantastic job. I mean, they keep their ears to the ground. They communicate when there's a need, when there's an opportunity, and when there's a challenge. And they're a great team of folks to work with, no doubt. So it looks like we are running close on time. David, you've been here before. You've been a co-host. You've been a guest. But once again, you are going to participate in one of our favorite parts of this program, which is called Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire, thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
David, are you ready?
Couldn't be more ready.
What's the favorite place that David French loves to shop?
I like them all. I love shopping at L.L. Bean. I love shopping at, I love Costco. I love Brooks Brothers.
So you're just a shopper.
Nordstrom's. Best Buy. I like the possibilities of walking into a store and wondering how much stuff I can carry out of there in every trip.
They love you too, I can tell you that. Mary?
All right, this one's a little more serious. What has been your proudest moment in your career?
That's a great question. My proudest moment was getting tax reform done without a border adjustment tax. That was a twofer. I'll never have that thrill again. But I'll also say that the most interesting moment, and this is going to surprise people, was in 2008 when the economy was melting down, and lobbying on the federal rescue, the TARP, was maybe the most interesting thing I've ever done. And it was a lobbying-wide exercise to try to make sure that we could get we could pass a bill to rescue the financial system. And my members at the time didn't have anything to benefit from other than stability. And I was working with lobbyists around DC to try to pitch in and help. It was like a pro bono lobbying effort. And that was the most interesting thing I've ever done in lobbying.
Well, it's everybody came together. It was an existential crisis to everything. I mean,
we were within hours of the U.S. financial system melting down. And people don't realize how grave the crisis was. And people in hindsight have thought, you know, maybe TARP wasn't the right answer. And maybe
it wasn't the time.
But it was the only answer at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it failed once in the House. And that's when people realize this is going to get real, and we got to put our parochial interests aside, and we got to dig in and fight. And I mean, that was a really interesting moment in time.
Yeah, it's nice when you can work in Washington and actually work together arm in arm with the same passion and vision as the guy that you normally would work in opposition to, and where you're trying to get your part of it and they're trying to get their part of it. You're just working to make sure that we get it right and we save our economy and have a future. David, I'm going to ask you one last question. And that is, as a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be in the Navy.
I don't know why the Village People song just went into my head. But it
well,
did.
Me too. I just had a Village People moment. Fortunately, I was past that by the time the Village People came along. But you know, I wanted to go to the U.S. Naval Academy, and I wanted to be in the Navy.
That's fantastic. Well, you did the next best thing. You're a lobbyist, and you're working for the Retail Federation. It can't get better than that. David, thank you so much for being a part of the Retail Gets Real episode and to give us a little bit of insights as to what's coming up in 2021. It's going to be an interesting ride and quite the journey ahead. And I think that I speak for both Mary and the rest of our colleagues to say that we're excited to be doing it with you. So good luck and thank you for doing the show.
Mary and Bill, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And Mary, thank you once again for co-hosting.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
And thank all of you all out there for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You can find more information about today's discussion and more at retailgetsreal.com. And please send your feedback and episode ideas to podcast@nrf.com. As we have concluded each episode during this time of a pandemic, please be safe, stay well. Until next time, thanks again.